Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, January 23rd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Oh, every time I say 2015, it just bugs the heck out of me. I don't know why, but it's just like, oh my gosh, it's even hard to say. 2015, 2016 will be easy, but 2015. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. It's too much like Buck Rogers or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. It's just.
I am a child of the 1900s.
I know. That doesn't
live long. I never expected to get into the 21st century. It's like, I don't know, a little bit strange.
Yes, it is. And and the world gets stranger as we go along also. So it's in the year 2525. Remember that one?
Yeah, I do. If man is still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they thought that was so far away. Little did they know you're going to be here, fella.
Yeah. Well, let's take a peek at gold today. The markets, we're kind of taking in all of the reports from yesterday, the week, and last night. Gold was down 850 on the New York spot price right now, down 850 at 1294.60. You have silver basically working its way back, only down a penny at 1840. You have platinum down 17 at 1267, along with palladium down 3 at 777. 777 right there on palladium. USDX today, numbers just keep going higher and higher. 0.71 after the huge increase yesterday, 94.94. It must have pulled back a little bit and is heading back up. Crude oil 0.85 to the downside at 45.46. Paper markets today, pressure on them. The Dow sheds 141 points at 17,672. NASDAQ was up 7 points at 47.57. And the S&P was down at 2051, and the 10-year yield is still quite a ways below the 2% at 1.82%, down 0.08. So there was a lot of hoopla yesterday, Al, when you were gone. And
is that what they call it nowadays?
That's what they hoopla.
And so when you're out walking around the farmer's field, his pasture, so don't step on the hoopla.
No, no, it's not, no, not that. But certainly with the European Union decision, I talked about it a little bit yesterday before your interview with James Corbett. And
well, we'll get into that a little more. Just one thing I wanted to say about today's price of gold being down at the moment, a little over $8. Earlier in the day, it was actually down 18, and it went down rapidly at the beginning.
Early trading, it did.
Just had a waterfall event where it dropped about 18, and now it's been inching its way back up, and it's regained $10 of that down. And that's interesting to me, because if the people, if the powers that be were still inclined to depress the price of gold, today would have been a great opportunity for it. They've got a perfect excuse. They've got pretext for the price of gold to fall. And as it's working out, they're only getting a little over $8 for the day. At least that's how it stands at the moment. Now, my response to that is this. Is that all you got? All right? That's all you can do? The government and or the powers that be, if they are determined to hold and suppress, to depress the price of gold, this was a great opportunity. They should have. I mean, I would have expected that if someone was working to push gold down, working at it intentionally, not just some aberration in the market, working at it, I would have expected to see the price of gold fall by $30 today and make it stick. Not $30 and it comes back 20. $30, maybe more. This would have been a great opportunity. Didn't do it. To me, I look at it and I wonder, are you guys out of Schlitz? Is it possible that the powers that be no longer really have either the capacity or the will to continue to suppress the price of gold? And I don't think anyone can answer that question. I certainly can't. But it is an intrigue for me. That's an intriguing question. I should have seen the price fall more than it has. If it's only $8, it suggests to me that maybe the price suppression mechanism has been impaired or maybe even canceled. You think that's reasonable or wishful thinking?
Well, I think they can always put pressure on gold whenever they want. But I also believe that reality does have a tendency to show itself up in the metals first. And the price gains that we've seen for gold this month, we haven't seen since in the short-term frame, since I saw 2007. So let's go back to 2007. So certainly the events of the world, and, you know, manipulating, I believe, certain things, you also have to have the balance of the picture also. I mean, I mean, they don't want to get caught, you know, manipulating the prices. So, I mean, reality does take over. And certainly you do have more people coming into the markets. And certainly when you have the physical buying of gold and silver, it's certainly going to, push that price up, because a lot of what we see in the numbers for gold and silver is the paper trading, and it's they can manipulate the prices. So, but to say that they're out of,
I wonder if they're running out of their capacity or at least their willingness to suppress the prices, because somebody's supplying some physical gold in order to back this up. And I know that most of it's, the vast majority is paper gold, but still somebody's taking physical gold and someone has to supply it. And I have a strong suspicion that in the end, the government has to, one way or another, be either losing physical gold or they are encouraging their best friends forever to give up their physical gold in order to maintain the illusion, the price illusions.
I mean, we certainly have seen, you know, and trust me, there is no one bigger for gold than me, the price of gold and the price of silver. You know, so I'm not, but I have also learned to respect their ability to do whatever they want in at certain periods of time. And I also believe that was a pretty good hit from 1900 down to 1150. So, I mean, they were able to certainly put the whack on gold. They accomplished what they needed, and are they finished with their? Are they finished with what they needed? Low prices for gold for possibly.
Well,
you know, because
it,
of the
though,
world, because of the world situations anymore dictate for higher gold prices, and gold will react on reality, not on their illusions. I mean, their illusions
ultimately.
Yeah. And you know, we've had
illusions
we've had a good run in gold, but you know, to say one day to see it move up and they're done playing with it. Don't know yet.
No, neither do I. I don't know either. I'm just saying.
But I do believe
this is a possible implication. And you look at it and say, maybe that's true. Maybe it's not true. But maybe it's true. You know, the one thing about it, knocking gold down from 1910 or whatever it was, 1920 on down to 1150, that wasn't a cost-free event. Some people that were closely associated with the government itself, people close, somebody put up some gold and they lost. And they suffered that loss in order to accomplish the perceived decline in the price of gold. It may be, you know, you get to a point where you just say, look, I've had it. I put up as much gold as I want. I'm not doing it. I'm not losing anymore. If they get to that, then manipulation's over.
There was huge trades that were several trades. I can't remember. I don't have the paperwork in front of me that were completed early morning. You know, they did it when London was on lunch break, and they did it before our markets opened, and these huge trades came in, dumping gold. And, you know, these are all private moments, and even the reports coming off of various commodity traders were, you know, they're all puzzled. Like, again, why do you do this when you're trying to get the best prices you can when you're looking to sell something? And each time those trades were completed, there was like three or four of them, we had the big drop, the big drops we saw in gold. So you can track it and you can see it. And, you know, then once that psychology and you have stock markets rise to these levels, it's you begin to change, you know, that psychological impact, and you start having people that were new into the market begin selling, you know, because they'd rather be in paper. They don't understand gold like our listeners do, and they begin selling, and then it just adds a little more pressure to it. So, I mean, I think with what we face in worldwide, I mean, all our situations that are happening worldwide, I personally believe that this is the bottom of gold. We're not, I don't believe we'll see 1150 again. There's just too many things going on. And I think these are great opportunities to still buy. And the thing of it is, you know, people say to me, and I know there's a lot out there on the fence hoping that price is correct. You can't time the market. And even with gold, when gold reaches 2000 again, or 1900 again, it's still going to be a great buying opportunity considering what is happening at that point in time. Gold could be $3,000. And if you have the world's financial system collapsing, what else would you buy at $3,000? So even $3,000 is going to be a great price for gold.
But it's a greater price.
A greater price at right
$1,300.
Now. You betcha.
We got an article here. Where are we for time? We have enough time. King Abdullah, shrewd force who reshaped Saudi Arabia, dies at age 90. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, who came to the throne in old age and earned a reputation as a cautious reformer, even as the Arab Spring revolts toppled heads of state and Islamic State militants threatened the Muslim establishment that he represented. He died on Friday, and he was 90 years old. Now, this is interesting information, I mean, because Saudi Arabia has been blamed for causing the fall in the price of crude oil. All Saudi Arabia essentially had to do when crude oil started to fall, the price started to fall, all they had to do is say, well, we'll cut production. And if we cut production, the supply will be reduced and price will go back up, or at least be held steady. But Saudi Arabia refused to cut production. And they said, we're going to just pump just like nothing was happening. And by refusing to cut their production, which they've done in the past, they essentially allowed, and some would say caused, the price of crude oil to fall further and further until it's down near $45 a barrel now. So the question is, when King Abdullah is replaced, I suppose with the crown prince, I'm not sure who's going to replace him in Saudi Arabia, but as soon as that new ruler is installed, will he continue to pump oil and allow the price of crude to fall, or will the new ruler make changes in the production, in Saudi Arabia production, that essentially stops the falling price for crude oil and perhaps even causes the price to begin to regain what it's lost in the last few months. So that's the question that surrounds his birth, as near as I can see. The rest of it is interesting, but or death, excuse me. Well, depending on you.
Well,
some people say birth into the next one. Like,
no.
but for now, yeah, you're right.
Death. Yeah, it's death.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly, I mean, and then you wonder who controls the king, you know, because of the agreement that they, the relationship they had with the U.S., and but from my understanding was that, that the person that is replacing him, you know, I mean, they knew he was going to be dying fairly soon. The man was 90. Of course, he didn't. Pictures I've seen, he doesn't look 90. They don't even know the date of his birth. So
actually, probably some 40 guy. Some guy who was 40, and you give a man 40 years old, billions of dollars, and he's not likely to last long.
No,
it's gonna be an incandescent couple of years there, but probably won't last all that long.
The markets seem to think that you know, it's gonna be a status quo, you know, and they will carry on, you know, their plan, their agenda that they have. So
I'd have to imagine, if I had to guess, I'd say that the new king will probably carry on with this policy for a month or two anyway. I don't think he's going to change policy. It's less likely to me that he's going to be anointed king and he's going to turn around first thing. He's, all right, let's stop pumping and knock the price of crude oil back up. I think he's going to let the dust settle for a month or two, and then he'll do what he wants to do. And whether that's allow the pumping to continue or restrict the production of crude oil in Saudi Arabia remains to be seen. I have a hunch he's going to restrict it. That'd be my guess, if I had to bet. But it's, you know, close call.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
if that's true, then the price of gasoline, you can expect it to start rising in the second quarter of this year. If that were true, if my speculation is mistaken, then the price of gasoline is going to continue to fall, already or under $2 a gallon in some places in the country. That's pretty hard to believe. I mean, less than $2 a gallon for gasoline? Who would have bet on that? You know, if I'd bet $1,000 in Las Vegas that a year ago that the price of gasoline would fall below $2 a gallon, how much money, what kind of odds could I have gotten on that bet, Melody?
Well, I mean, in relationship to the U.S. dollar, who you know, trading close to 95, who would have thought that? You know, but, you know, we know that trade's become probably a little crowded. So, you know, you are going to see probably the two reverse. You'll see the price of oil go up and the dollar fall.
Yeah.
So it's
two ends of the same teeter-totter.
Yeah.
One goes up, the other one will go down. We can anticipate that's probably what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So
let's take a break for some commercials, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, Have peace and request your pandemic kit today, or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
I was just thinking of that song, King Tut. Remember King Tut?
Yeah, with Steve Martin?
Steve Martin, yeah.
And why were you thinking of that?
Because we were talking about kings. King Tut. Mm. Anyway.
All right. I don't think that could be misunderstood. You know, you make those are the kinds of remarks, you have the Muslims marching around the Frank studio if you're not careful. What do we got next, Melody?
How about
U.S. manufacturing rebound, a virtual myth? This is from CNBC, and that's the headline. I say one of the most encouraging aspects of the U.S. economic recovery is the halo effect on manufacturing, which accounts for 1 in 6 private sector jobs. Yet a new study is dismissing that renaissance as little more than a myth. The report by the nonpartisan Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, Washington-based think tank, asserts that the sector's growth has been fueled in part by free trade advocates and government statistics that mask a sharp decline in manufacturing activities since 2000. The foundation says manufacturing recovery has been merely tepid since the Great Recession ended in 2009. American manufacturing has still not recovered to 2007 output or employment levels. Study said the U.S. has lost roughly 1 million manufacturing jobs and 15,000 manufacturing establishments since 2000. You know, losing those jobs is one thing. Losing manufacturing establishments is another. Those are the businesses, essentially, that are manufacturing things, only they're not anymore. Trouble in the sector goes even deeper within that. Since 2000, the only real growth in U.S. manufacturing output, as measured by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, has been in computers and electronic components. The study says a sector that is seriously overstated as a result of very rapid rate of progress and computer processing speeds and yada yada, they continue. But in any case, the point is that we've been led to believe that U.S. manufacturing is reviving. And this report indicates that no, it's not. And the previous reports of a recovery have also been mistaken or intentionally deceiving. You know, the probable Greek refusal to repay most of its debts, plus the recent turmoil in the Swiss franc, certainly illustrate that the European Union is financially unstable. Whether this instability can be overcome or is already sufficient to precipitate a domino-like crash in Europe remains to be seen. But we are certainly seeing evidence that the domino theory is alive and well and on the verge of functioning in a dramatic fashion over the next several months. And one of the evidences of this, or at least arguable evidences, is that our manufacturing base has not made a recovery since 2000. It's been in a state of decline since 2000, and we are now perhaps somewhere in some regards where we were in 2007. But we've declined steadily since 2008. To me, this is another part of the domino theory, in a sense. And you have to look at it and wonder not only which dominoes may have knocked down the U.S. manufacturing sector, but what will be the dominoes that are knocked down by the U.S., by the declining U.S. Manufacturing sector. What's next, Melody? Do you have any idea? If manufacturing is going down, what will be the next consequences? Anything obvious to you?
Well, I mean, we've certainly seen a lot of different areas declining. We've certainly seen and read about the destruction of all these malls, these vacant malls that are just being bulldozed over. No people. You close the stores, the closing of Sears and Penny's, all the stores, all these retail stores that are shuttering their doors. Certainly the home market. Numbers that show that the housing market is, you hit rock bottom. Yeah, you're going to do a little bit better, but it certainly isn't to the degree where we once were. And, maybe we shouldn't be, because where we once were was all based on such terrible debt and everything. So, it's just another sign that shows, manufacturing is going. The more trade agreements are created, they're not coming back.
And even if they do come back, they're probably coming back with robots rather than job openings for people. And the big implication here is that manufacturing used to provide a lot of jobs for a lot of people who may not have had a superb education or even have a particularly high IQ. But they were willing to work, and there were jobs for them on the assembly lines.
And they paid well.
You could say the lower middle class populated these jobs. And in some instances, they're well into the middle class. Those jobs aren't coming back. And that's the strong implication. Those jobs are not coming back. And again, what do we do with those people? How are they going to survive? What are they going to do for a living?
Well, they can go to free college now, and they can sign up and get their 2 years of free college from Obama.
Do you get graham crackers and milk in the mornings?
Maybe. That's to come.
It's to be part of the incentive. You go back and breakfast, get your education and breakfast.
And breakfast, you betcha. Uh-huh. So, certainly I couldn't believe what I, there was a video. There, something happened yesterday. I don't recall what it was, but it showed Obama interviewing a woman. I can't recall her name. I shouldn't even be bringing it up on the program. But she was made famous by being on a YouTube video in a bathtub eating Fruit Loops. Now you say, what's that got to do with anything that we talk about?
Maybe she's just a potential appointee for the attorney general's position.
Maybe. And it's just It's so bizarre.
It becomes irrational, irrational, irrational.
Yes.
And I wonder, you know, you have to look at it and you see these crazy things. This is just a peculiar example with
but
Obama.
But this is supposed to be the president.
I understand.
Interviewing a woman who was made famous by eating Fruit Loops sitting in a bathtub.
And he could sit back and say, that's nothing. I was famous for being born in Kenya.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's anything. You got to find something to talk about on the news, and sometimes it's stressful. You know, sometimes we have more news than we can almost, certainly more news than we can sometimes comprehend.
Sometimes we just need to be light.
And sometimes there's just nothing going on. There isn't anything going on that's obvious and that you haven't already talked about. And apparently whoever it is that reported on Obama's interview with a woman famous for eating Fruit Loops in a bathtub, they had a slow news day and they had to come up with. And so you wonder, is the world really getting crazier and crazier, or thanks to the internet and YouTube and little cameras that we can carry around on our cell phones and the rest of that sort of thing, are we really getting so much news right now that we can't help but get some of the crazy stuff? And what I'm trying to get to, maybe the crazy stuff has been going on all along, but there wasn't a news outlet for it. And now there's so many competing news outlets that you've got to report anything you can find, including the craziness. So are we actually getting crazier, Melody, or are we just reporting more craziness? What do you think?
I think we're getting more crazy. I'd like to think that there wasn't previous leaders of this country interviewing women eating Fruit Loops out of a bathtub. And here's another sign, and I don't know how big of this deal is, but you have Netanyahu that was invited by Congress, bypassing Obama to come and speak in front of Congress, I believe in March. And, to me, it's a sign of the breakdown. It shows.
That's true. But whose fault is that?
It doesn't matter. It's a sign of the breakdown. There's everybody's at fault.
I don't know that
there's
everybody is. But we're seeing here a lot of people, including Netanyahu, are just saying, I don't know who that idiot is in the White House, but I don't need to pay any attention to him. There's a lot of people that would agree with that assessment. A lot of people who simply view Obama with contempt. And he seems unwilling. He doesn't respond to it. On the one hand, you could say, well, good for you. You got a thick skin. On the other hand, if you get enough criticism, maybe it's time to pay attention to some of it. And he doesn't. Not in a significant way. He just keep smiling, keep golfing, making more money than most of the rest of us. So he's good. You know?
Well, one thing he's doing is he's going to India. Obama is leaving this weekend. He's going to be a guest of honor at the India's Republic Day festivities. Obama and India Prime Minister Narendra Modi are trying to move the two largest democracies past the tensions. And they met in Washington for the first time late last year. And they swap stories about their political campaigns, particularly how they each employed tech-savvy tactics to attract new voters. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, tech-savvy tactics, is that the same as voter fraud? Is it the ability to create an Obamacare website, internet that was, so unsuccessful? I mean, and again, it's another sign of this breakdown. That,
Is the breakdown between foreign countries and the United States, or is it between foreign countries and Obama? Do you see that there's a difference there that's significant, or is it pretty much the same either way?
I think it's the same. I think it's a breakdown in everything. We talk about our economies. We talk about the financial system, our monetary systems worldwide. And I think these are just, again, the signs that the breakdown is real. It's here. And very soon upon us, you're going to see it grow and impact from these decisions that we're seeing these leaders make, the way they are, the way they conduct themselves. And, you know, of course,
what
Obama is just the most obvious.
Really on the edge of a kind of some sort of collapse.
Yes.
You know, if you look around, the evidence is certainly mounting that we are on the edge. If we're not already in a global depression, we're on the edge of one. And this is consistent with what you're talking about. We have nations that are, the relationship to other nations or to the United States and or to Obama, those relationships are beginning to fragment, tear, disintegrate. And it's not just a question of Obama or the United States. It's a question of something, you know, when the economy, the global economy begins to collapse into a global depression, there's a lot of people that are going to panic. And they're going to become, some people will express that panic by rioting in the streets. Others will express it by calling Obama, you know, dirty names or whatever. Hard to say how this will go, but that's part of the reason for the disintegration that you're seeing right now. When everybody's making money, everybody's pals. Yippee. But when somebody turns off the faucet and the money stops flowing, all of a sudden people start fighting among themselves, and former good buddies and BFFs become, you know, enemies, serious enemies, adversaries. And ultimately, this historically, this is not a new pattern. World goes into some sort of an economic problem, and the next sound you hear is kaboom. We see invasions and bombings and wars as people are, you know, pushed too far. Or maybe they get elected by making crazy promises. And they're left to actually try to fulfill on their promises. And when they can't, they have to blame foreign adversaries. And the whole thing, you know, you wish there was a rule, an enforceable rule that everybody had to tell the truth. At least in politics, you gotta tell the truth. Right? That's certainly not the rule. We don't have that rule at all. We are overwhelmed by the number of lies and deceit. And it comes out obviously. Everybody knows. You know, there's no surprise. Government issues economic indicator numbers, and everybody knows they're falsified. Not a surprise. It's not an argument. We just move on with our lives. They don't care. They feed us horse manure, and we sit back and say, no problem. You know, we'll get on with it. I wish we could guarantee that we were getting the truth. And if we could get that guarantee, it would be a lot easier to reach a consensus as to what's happening. It would be a lot easier to trust your government, even if you didn't like the truth they were telling us. Well, at least they're telling us the truth.
But not only would we recognize what is happening, we'd be able to correct.
I know.
And fix. You can't correct and fix anything based on lies.
Yeah, I know. You know, the key to every problem, solving any problem, is diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You've got to precisely diagnose what the problem is, and then the solution is fairly simple.
Yep.
Right? But the diagnosis is the hard part, and you can't do it when we're being lied to. Let's take a break. More commercials. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And, you know, we've been talking about one of the most disturbing factors about our lives, our time, is that there's so many lies and misunderstandings and theories that may or may not even make sense, even if they're honest. We don't know what's going on. We are rudderless in terms of values. You know, it goes to our faith, it goes to our economics, it goes to our politics, a bunch of different things. And it's like, where do we find values that we can hang on to? You know, traditional values. Say, okay, this has worked for last 20, 30, 50,000 years. Let's believe that. Let's hang on to these values. And right now, that's not happening. And one of the examples of that is here in the European Union. There's an article from the New York Times. It says, European Central Bank bets big on curing the economy. After more than a year of speculation, Mr. Draghi, the never-predictable head of the European Central Bank, has given global investors what they've clamored for, with an extra twist, an open-ended commitment to buy Eurozone government bonds in bulk. All right. First, it's interesting to me that the article says that Mr. Draghi and the European Central Bank has given global investors what they've clamored for. It implies that Mr. Draghi is working for the best interests of multinational corporations, multinational investors, global investors, and arguably the New World Order. His focus is on the globe, not on Europe. That's the implication. This is a newspaper article. Mr. Draghi didn't say that, but I look at the words, and if it's true that he's focused on pleasing global investors, then we have to wonder how much he's trying to please domestic investors of the European Union or the individual countries in the European Union. And then it says he's got an open-ended commitment to buy Eurozone government bonds in bulk. And although the existing program, quantitative easing program, is supposed to end in September of 2016, Mr. Draghi sat back and said, well, if it doesn't work by then, we'll just keep going with it. You know, we'll keep on and on and on. And that tells us that Mr. Draghi is not necessarily confident that this program is going to work. He's trying something right now that hopefully is going to stimulate the European economy and generate some genuine growth, not just artificial growth based on fiat dollars or fiat euros and inflation and so on, not just an illusion. Hopefully he's going to generate something real, but he's not convinced that'll happen. And apparently the one thing is that he's not going to do is make one of the mistakes that we made here in the United States. We started with quantitative easing. And it was presumed that $800 billion, I believe, is what was committed back about 2008, 2009. And everybody said, oh my gosh, $800 billion, that's never been done before. That's crazy, that's shocking, that's outrageous. Turned out it was no big thing. They did quantitative easing, and they stopped. And it didn't work that well. Right? It did not. It was good enough to keep the economy from collapsing, but it did not work. It was not sufficient to put the economy back on, you know, four wheels and send it speeding off down the highway. So they said, okay, well, that was just quantitative easing one. Now we're going to have quantitative easing two. Well, they tried that also. And in the end, it wasn't successful in terms of stimulating the economy and revising the economy. And then they had quantitative easing three, which they have ended in October of last year when they stopped buying government bonds. In a sense, the current low interest rates are perhaps still part of quantitative easing three. But my point is this. By having quantitative easing one and two and three, two and three are each evidence that one didn't work. And three is evidence that one and two didn't work. And we are wondering now whether we're destined for quantitative easing four. And the reason that's an important question is because if we're destined for another dose of quantitative easing, who is going to believe it? In a world where your monetary system and your economy is based as much as anything on confidence, public confidence, who is going to believe that the Federal Reserve can trot out another dose of quantitative easing, that would be quantitative QE4, after one, two, and three weren't particularly successful? Who's going to say, oh, this time, this time, that's the three, the fourth one, this is the one that's really going to set us on. Most people are going to yawn. Like, yeah. You're going to send more money to the big banks and the financial institutions, and it'll probably not accomplish much. So Draghi, I speculate, has set back, and rather than have, if quantitative easing one doesn't work by 2016, he's not going to start quantitative easing two, and there won't be three or four over in Europe. There will be quantitative easing one time, and it will simply last as long as it needs to last in order to bring the economy back, you know, into a productive and profitable state. But the question is, will quantitative easing work? You know, some people are arguing, yeah, this is a great idea. This is so smart. But will it really work? It's been tried in the United States with, you give it credit, it prevented a collapse, or at least postponed a collapse. We've had a kind of success, but it hasn't stimulated the economy back to running like it did prior to, say, in 2006, 2007. Japan has tried it. They've tried quantitative easing for over a decade, and they've tried elements of quantitative easing. They haven't been able to shake deflation in Japan for most of 20 years. Britain's tried it. They've had a little bit of success, but nothing to brag about. This is not like slipping amphetamines to a racehorse. Whatever we're doing with quantitative easing, it might help us a little bit, but it's not going to guarantee that we're the first ones to cross the finish line. We're not the fastest horse around, and quantitative easing won't create that, you know, that capacity. So you got to wonder. And there's, in part of the article that I'm reading from, or that I started reading from, there's references where people are just pointing out quantitative easing. You know, Draghi has said he'll do whatever he has to do to make the economy rebound. Quantitative easing, in many people's opinion, and perhaps most people's opinion, is really the last straw. They're sinking and going underwater, and they are grabbing at quantitative easing as if it were a log, when really it's maybe just a straw. But the point behind some of these comments is this is the last shot. This doesn't work. You just, board them up. Board up your businesses and the rest of that. Put your cars up on blocks and park them, and they'll be there when the depression is over. But if quantitative easing doesn't work, what else can? And that is so strange and so disturbing. Because if it's true that the only solution that we have to the problem of European stagnation and perhaps depression, the only way out of that is by government manipulating the money supply. Is that a rational solution? Why is it we can't produce more? Why is it that we can't put more people to work? Nope, the only solution is we've got to print more phony money. And that's essentially the argument that prevailed here in the United States from quantitative 1, 2, and 3. And if we go to quantitative easing 4, that will be the argument. That's all we can do is print more phony baloney money. And you sit back and you look at it from the outside and you say, is that a viable solution? Is that the kind of solution where we can sit back and say, well, yeah, that'll solve the problem? That's like me using my MasterCard to pay off my Visa, to pay off my American Express. It may be the only solution I've got at the moment in order to keep them from canceling my American Express and my Visa, but just the same, anybody who looks at this understands that can't be a solution to my financial problems. It may postpone the day of reckoning, but the day of reckoning is coming, and unless I get a job and learn how to produce enough money to actually pay my debts, there's going to be a serious problem. That's true for me, it's true for Europe, it's true for the United States. I just don't see how we can suppose, how can we reasonably imagine that our financial and debt problems can be solved simply by printing more phony baloney paper dollars and digital dollars. Because if it can be, then none of us have to work anymore. All we've got to do is just tell the Federal Reserve, you just keep printing those fiat dollars, that's all. I'm not showing up for work anymore. Melody, you don't have to work anymore. Don't have to work. Government's got it all under control. All they've got to do is print more money. If that's not true, if they can't solve all our problems by printing more money, can they really solve any of our problems by printing more money, or do they just postpone them? What do you think, Melody? Do we have solutions on the horizon, or are they just kicking the can a little further down the road?
Well, of course, I think we all know they're just kicking the can a little bit further down the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly the printing of the money is not a solution to anything. It just keeps it, really from collapsing. And those at top, the bankers, they continue to get wealthy based on this stimulus. And that's what it's all about. Hey, why not print money if we can continue to get wealthy? We get wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. Instead,
some
of,
people do. Yeah, a handful of people do.
The top 1%ers certainly do get wealthier and wealthier, and even those in power, those that mean anything, those that make the decisions of continue to printing, they get wealthier and wealthier and more powerful, and they'll keep doing it, until people say enough or it collapses. And I certainly see a collapse coming far sooner than citizens saying enough's enough. So certainly we're going to have a collapse.
To say enough is enough, they've got to understand what's going on. One of my great
hopes,
they've got to understand it. If they don't understand it, they're just going to sit there like so many bewildered beasts and wondering where they're going to find their next allotment of food. And they'll follow anybody who can deliver it. One of the things that I hope for, I don't expect, but I really hope for it, is that if and when the system actually collapses, that the public will have or find enough intelligence and knowledge where they can sit back and say, you are one of the people who are responsible for this collapse. I'd like to see the proper parties blamed. Right. I'd like to see a solution that reflects, okay, here was the fundamental mistake. We should never have done this, but we did. I'd like to see it. I don't expect to see it, but I would like to see the people accurately assess and place blame if they're in the event that there is a collapse. Who's responsible? And I don't mean just one man. I mean it'll be tens of thousands. But who's going to be responsible? Who's going to be held responsible? And I'm going to bet you nobody will be held responsible. It'll just be, oh my gosh, after all of our best efforts, you'll never believe this. Things went south on us. And it was just so unpredictable. We couldn't have predicted that. Who could have imagined? It was a black swan event. It was an extra cold winter, an extra hot summer. It was something. It was anything. But it wasn't the people in Washington or in Brussels. They didn't have anything. They're just innocent dupes at worst. So, think anybody's ever going to be held responsible for this, Melody?
Of course not. The ones that aren't responsible, they'll find
something. They'll be held responsible. Yeah, the ones who don't understand what's going on, which is to say the taxpayers, they're the ones. Oh, you're a taxpayer, aren't you? Oh, you're the one who's responsible. Cough up some money. They're like, what are you talking? I didn't do anything. Yeah, you just. What did you do? And to some extent, they're right. We're all going to be responsible in the event that we see a real problem. It would be nice to focus and blame and apportion it in accordance to, in a proportional way to each person according to their responsibility. But I doubt that any of us can sit back and say we're not responsible because most of us have refused to minimize our own ignorance. Most of us have refused to get educated. Most of us have refused to study and gain knowledge and at least protect ourselves. And that's one of the lessons in all of this from my opinion, from my perspective. One of the things you folks got to do, you may not be able to save the country. You might not be able to save the state. You might not be able to save your community, but you might be able to save yourself and your family. And in doing so, you do everybody a favor because if we don't have to take care of you, we don't have as many people to take care of. All right. We'll deal with the people that are ignorant, poor, and in desperate condition. And those of us who can protect ourselves relieve the country of its burden. It's a good thing. You need to get educated, folks. You can start this weekend. Melody and I are out of time. We've got to go. I want to thank all of you for listening. We always appreciate the audience, and we really do. That's not a casual remark. We hope you'll tune in again on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.